This is URN.
The Popular Table Breakdown.
Hello and welcome to The Popular Table, URN's top pop culture show and the only show on URN that has mismatched socks.
Really, Matt?
I'm joined in the studio by Shivani and Harry, and I'm Ibby, in case I haven't mentioned.
Beyonce, as we know, slays and is amazing. But she was in this music video dressed up in Bollywood attire. So there were quite a few issues on social media about cultural appropriation and the fact that they had a pretty famous Bollywood actress playing a part in this music video, but Beyonce also there, almost sexualizing the outfits and all sorts of things. People were not happy.
Yeah, they definitely weren't. We had a look at the video while we were waiting, actually, in the studio earlier, and what struck both of us, I think, was that there were elements of it which were done nicely, because the entire video is set in India. It kind of came across as almost like a tourist video ish it had that kind of feel to it, like a travel video in India, and that in itself wasn't too bad. I thought
that was quite good, because being Indian, I feel that there's a lot of misrepresentation of Indian culture in society and in social media, and I think it was good that they managed to portray a happy, positive light on cultures and practices that they do there.
And I also think that with a lot of the things they showed with the video, and I'm excluding the clips with Beyonce in it, with, you know, because they had clips of the Holi Festival, which is the Festival of Colours, they didn't come across, at least the way they filmed it, didn't come across as fetishizing it or exoticizing it. But I don't know. I think the bits with Beyonce seemed problematic. Harry, what do you think?
Well, I'm gonna disagree with both.
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
In the sense that I agree that they showed not the nice bits of India, but I disagree with the fact that they made it see they almost showed a fake version of your culture, and they did so by looking at events that are what a white British person would call stereotypical. Mm-hmm. Even the dress they wore, and I think it was bad from a Western point of view that we viewed you as such. Yes, you may think that was fine, but you've got to remember that if you asked someone who has no knowledge of India what they thought, they'd probably say Bollywood and belly dancing and the painting, and all of which was in which was in the video, which was great. But they didn't show enough of everyday India in it. Mm-hmm. They didn't show enough of a very diverse culture. They showed snapshots of it, and I didn't like the fact they brought in a religious element and had her wearing the tiara type, which I believe is of quite religious significance, the headgear.
Well, it was interesting when I was looking at that, and she did have multiple costumes, so I don't even know if we're referring to the same one, but there was one part where Shivani and I were looking at it and we weren't even sure where that came from, because that particular, there was a bit of headgear which didn't even seem to fit. Like it would seem more appropriate for a Mardi Gras float,
yes,
than India.
Yeah.
I mean, see that may be where we are stereotyping. Mm-hmm. Britain or the West as such is stereotyping what we perceive India to be, and I don't think this video has particularly helped. Not all of the blame can, I don't know the fact that people have been blaming Beyonce, because remember it was a Coldplay song.
Yes.
So it is not her fault.
No.
It is more the stylist's fault for being drawn into Western views.
I think you mentioned everyday India, and then you said how vast the culture is. I think it'd be very difficult to show a video encompassing everyday India, because it's just one of those places that one person's life is absolutely completely different and will never overlap with someone else's life.
But you mentioned the fact that there was a Bollywood star there, very well known Bollywood star. How disrespectful is it to invite her there?
Absolutely.
And then not give her not give her time to like be seen.
Well, she should have frankly had the starring role, like if it was and I mean
she doesn't even Beyonce doesn't even dance properly. She doesn't even do the moves.
She does a little bit of a head shake.
But even then, I mean, you'd think that out of respect for someone's culture, you would learn the official moves. She does like the
stereotypical light bulb screwing.
Yes, the light bulb screwing, head shaking, all that, which I thought was absolutely. I was really furious.
Yeah,
because they have custom dances, and I thought she was making a mockery of it. Don't get me started on the whole sexual nature of it. It's not meant to be. So I was like, I actually only got about 3/4 of the way through and was going to turn it off.
This is where cultural appropriation itself is such a tricky thing to discuss, where there is a line between cultural appreciation and appropriation, and it is a very blurred line, and I will be the first to admit that it is, you know, it's difficult to pinpoint.
Yeah,
it's sometimes a case of you know it when you see it rather than it being definable.
And that's where Twitter, I think, is bad. I don't particularly use Twitter for this very reason. Mm-hmm. I think that people will make a brief statement. It's like when you're sitting in a room and you hear the last bit of a mm-hmm. conversation, mm-hmm. and you sort of take it completely out of context and then type it up. And this time you type it up on the internet and it goes absolutely mad. And I mean, we've already got Facebook. Why do we need Twitter of all things?
I also think that on Twitter, you kind of have a spur of the moment thought and write it down and put it out there, as opposed to something that you've sat down and thought about.
And once you write it down and send it out there, you can't really get it back as well as you can on Facebook. Facebook, you can delete the post. Twitter.
Well, I mean, Twitter you can, but Twitter, one of the differences being with Facebook, you can also edit the post.
Edit, exactly.
Twitter you can't. It's funny though, maybe I'm the only one who does this, but when I'm using Twitter, because I know it's only 140 characters, I'm a lot more thoughtful about what I put on there.
I wouldn't know. I don't know how to use it.
I think Twitter, just the nature of Twitter means it's a lot more fast paced than Facebook.
This is true.
And people tend to just blurt something out in the spur of the moment, thinking it's funny and maybe not thinking about the correct wording, mm-hmm. or the situation that something is being put into. So Twitter arguments are fairly common.
But with regards to this particular instance, and of course we do have another fascinating example slightly later, but with this particular instance, I think it was really important, and I'm fully on J.K. Rowling's side, first of all, because she didn't actually tweet support for an individual's views, but I think it was really important and was really good of her to kind of point out that, look, if you're claiming I've made these tweets, you should surely be able to produce said tweets, because you can quote tweets, you can screenshot tweets, and I think that perhaps is one of the advantages of something, and I won't say necessarily of Twitter itself, but of social media as a whole, where yes, you can put everything out there, but there is that, it is then out there. And tweets can be deleted, it is true, so can Facebook posts, so can Instagram photos, as many have been, but people can take screenshots before that happens. So if someone has an issue with it, they can take a picture of it, they can save it. So even if someone takes it down without an apology and just kind of pretends it didn't happen.
And even then, actually, nothing on the web is ever truly deleted.
Of course. So there is an interesting angle of accountability that social media does provide, which perhaps can be a good thing. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, there have been several other arguments where Twitter has been an argument on Twitter has, for example, there's that one who critiqued a young film critique her, and she mm-hmm. and she went and has basically now ruined his life.
I believe that was Amy Schumer commenting on a young critique who wasn't actually critiquing her performances, but
more making a sexist remark, almost slandering her. Yeah. And I think she called him out on it.
Quite rightly.
She definitely should have.
And I think just like, and then of course that sparked the whole thing, or you shouldn't, there's the should that be done, because it's a young person who's got the whole life ahead of them, and then there shouldn't that be done. And it was like, it caused Twitter is basically a battleground.
Basically.
Of ideas.
Yeah, that is. Says the person, and I mean myself, who's currently live tweeting this show.
battleground already. Who's watching, who's not watching. So here you go, it's a battleground. I'm pretty sure if Culture got a Twitter feed, we'd have some serious sparring matches, actually, Ibby.
Oh, I'm sure we would. Yeah. I'm looking forward to those.
Yeah, so I've been told apparently Culture's now getting a Twitter feed.
Ooh.
So you'll be competing against me, which will be very amusing.
Oh, this is going to be fantastic. So, you know, that's going to be the next big Twitter feed of 2016, Popular Table versus Culture Show.
Yep.
Move over Kanye. I'd say that.
God.
We are now joined in the studio by our very own head of speech, James Goodison. Welcome to the show, James.
Hello, Ibby. How's it going?
Good, thanks. How have you been?
Yeah, very well. It's always a pleasure to come on the Popular Table.
Oh, thanks. It's very flattering. We are now going to be talking about Doctor Who. For those of you who have unfortunately been living under a rock or have been off on your own adventures in a TARDIS and therefore have missed out on this particular time stream, Stephen Moffat will be finishing off his tenure as showrunner after the next season. There will not be a Doctor Who season, a full season in 2016, though we will be getting a Christmas special. And the decision to drop Moffat seems to have been received by a very mixed range of reactions. Some people have been absolutely thrilled, including our own Alex, who is unfortunately not here on air today, but did message in earlier saying, yes, no more Moffat, hurrah, come to my house party. On the other hand, some people who are a little heartbroken. James, where do you fall?
You know, it's such a difficult question. Because I think that Stephen Moffat is extremely ambitious, and was extremely ambitious when it came to Doctor Who. I think that the River Song storyline, which stretched nigh on throughout the entirety of his tenure, and before that with Russell T Davies, is one of the most complex and interesting pieces of Doctor Who television that we've ever seen. I think that he quite possibly wrote the greatest episode of all time when it came to the Day of the Doctor, of course, the 50th anniversary
fantastic
special.
Yeah,
absolutely
great,
fantastic piece of television. And it's really strange. I think that the Doctor Who always needs a breath of fresh air, and I think that perhaps it's the right sort of time after next season for Moffat to be stepping down. The problem, perhaps, is with his successor, Chris Chibnall. I think I pronounced that correct, don't I? Chris Chibnall, who he's pretty much in charge of Torchwood, which is very impressive. Having said that, his Doctor Who writing isn't
great.
Fantastic, is it? He's written Power of Three, I believe, which was a Matt Smith episode, which is quite poor. Should have really been a two-part type of thing. He wrote Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, which is okay. He's never written big picture, pushing the boat out pieces of Doctor Who. Stephen Moffat gets all this criticism, but in reality, if you look back at some of the most famous episodes of Doctor Who, they've all been from him.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing.
But then I wonder whether that might work in favour of the new showrunner, where he might not have been really strong at writing episodes, but he might be a really good showrunner, and if he, you know, delegates it to the right people to write the episodes. I mean, we've had Neil Gaiman come in and write again, not the second episode here, it was Warwick Davis in it, but the one with the TARDIS coming to life.
Oh yes, I know which one you mean.
Yeah, the Doctor's
Hungry
wife.
Earth.
The Doctor's wife. That's
or,
right.
Or Hungry Earth as well.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe that might be something to worth remembering. He might not necessarily be the best writer, the incoming Chris Chibnall, but he could be a very good showrunner.
That's true. There's completely different levels of management, and obviously Stephen Moffat played to his strengths in that regard. One thing that that the new showrunner is particularly good at is character development.
Yes.
And I think that's really telling, because realistically, who knows if Capaldi's going to be around
exactly,
for this
yeah,
new
this
showrunner.
Is,
I mean, one
yeah.
more season left.
This is a discussion that can regenerate itself into many other forms. But unfortunately, we have reached the end of our show. I just want to thank James, Harry and Shivani for coming on today. We will be back again next week. And this week, we also have just a reminder that the Popular Culture Lecture Series is continuing. It's on Wednesday, 5:30, C4 in the Physics Building.